Chapter 26 Considerations. I don't like fighting beside those Shan Chan, Gawain said softly, coming up beside Egwene. She didn't like it either, and she knew he would be able to sense that from her. What could she say? She couldn't turn the Shan Chan away. The Shadow had brought the Sharans to fight under its banner. Egwene, therefore, would have to use what she had. Anything she had. Her neck itched as she crossed the field to the meeting place about a mile or so east of the ford in Arafel. Bryn had already arrayed most of her forces at the ford. Aes Sedai could be seen atop the hills just south of the ford, and large squadrons of archers and pikemen were positioned below them on the slopes. The troops were feeling fresher. The days Egwene's force had spent retreating had relieved some of the pressure of warfare, despite attempts by the enemy to make them commit to combat. Egwene's chances depended on the Shan Chan joining the battle and engaging the Sharan channelers. Her stomach twisted. She'd once heard that in Camelin, unscrupulous men would throw starving dogs into a pit together and bet on which one would survive the ensuing fight. This felt the same to her. The Shan Chan Damani were not free women. They could not choose to fight. From what she'd seen of the Sharan male channelers, they were little more than animals themselves. Egwene should be fighting the Shan Chan with every breath, not allying with them. Her instincts rebelled as she approached the gathering of Shan Chan. The Shan Chan leader demanded this audience with Egwene. The light send it would be quick. Egwene had received reports on this Fortuona, so she knew what to expect. The diminutive Shan Chan Empress stood atop a small platform, watching the battle preparations. She wore a glittering dress, whose train extended a ridiculous distance behind her, carried by 8 Dakovale, those servants in the horribly immodest clothing. Various members of the Blood stood in groups, waiting with careful poses. Death Watch guards, hulking in their near-black armor, stood like boulders around the Empress. Egwene approached, guarded by her own soldiers and much of the Hall of the Tower. Fortuona had first tried to insist that Egwene come to visit her in her camp. Egwene had, of course, refused. It had taken hours to reach an agreement. Both would come to this location in Arafel, and both would stand rather than sit, so that neither could give the impression of being above the other. Still, Egwene was irritated to find the woman waiting. She'd wanted to time this meeting so they both arrived at the same moment. Fortuona turned from the battle preparations and looked at Egwene. It appeared that many of Suan's reports were false. True, Fortuona did look something like a child, with that slight build and delicate features. Those similarities were minor. No child had ever had eyes so discerning, so calculating. Egwene revised her expectations. She'd imagined Fortuona as a spoiled adolescent, the product of a coddled lifetime.
I have considered, Fortuona said, whether it would be appropriate to speak to you in person with my own voice.
Nearby, several of the Shan Chan Blood, with their painted fingernails and partially shaved heads, gasped. Egwene ignored them. They stood near several pairs of Suldam and Damani. If she let those pairs draw her attention, her temper might get the better of her.
I have considered myself, Egwene said, whether it would be appropriate to speak to one such as yourself, who has committed such terrible atrocities.
I have decided that I will speak to you, Fortuona continued, ignoring Egwene's remark. I think that for the time, it would be better if I see you not as Marath Damani, but as a queen among the people of this land.
No, Egwene said. You will see me for what I am, woman. I demand it.
Fortuona pursed her lips.
Very well, she finally said. I have spoken to Damani before. training them has been a hobby of mine. To see you as such does not violate protocol, as the Empress may speak with her pet hounds.
Then I will speak with you directly as well, Egwene said, keeping her face impassive. For the Amyrlin judges many trials. She must be able to speak to murderers and rapists in order to pass sentence upon them. I think you would be at home in their company, though I suspect they would find you nauseating.
I can see that this will be an uneasy alliance.
You expected otherwise? Egwene asked. You hold my sisters captive. What you have done to them is worse than murder. You have tortured them, broken their wills. I wish to the light you had simply killed them instead.
I would not expect you to understand what needs to be done, Fortuona said, looking back toward the battlefield. You are Marth Damani. It is natural for you to seek your own good, as you see it.
Natural indeed, Egwene said softly. This is why I insist that you see me as I am, for I represent the ultimate proof that your society and empire are built upon falsehoods. Here I stand, a woman you insist should be collared for the common good, and yet I display none of the wild or dangerous tendencies that you claim I should have. So long as I am free from your collars, I prove to every man and woman who draws breath that you are a liar. The other Seanchan murmured. Fortuona herself maintained a cool face.
You would be much happier with us, Fortuona said.
Oh, would I? Egwene said.
Yes. You speak of hating the collar, but if you were to wear it and see, you would find it a more peaceful life. We do not torture our Damani. We care for them and allow them to live lives of privilege.
You don't know, do you? Egwene asked.
I am the Empress, Fortuona said. My domination extends across seas, and the realms of my protection encompass all that humankind knows and thinks. If there are things I do not know, they are known by those in my empire, for I am the empire.
Delightful, Egwene said. And does your empire realize that I wore one of your collars? That I was once trained by your Suldam? Fortuona stiffened, then rewarded Egwene with a look of shock, although she covered it immediately.
I was in Falma, Egwene said. A Damani, trained by Renna.
Yes, I wore your collar, woman. I found no peace there. I found pain, humiliation, and terror.
Why did I not know of this? Fortuona asked loudly, turning. Why did you not tell me?
Egwene glanced at the collected Seanchan nobility. Fortuona seemed to be addressing one man in particular, a man in rich black and golden clothing, trimmed with white lace. He had an eye patch over one eye, black to match, and the fingernails on both hands were lacquered to a dark.
Matt? Egwene sputtered.
He gave a kind of half-wave, looking embarrassed. Oh, light, she thought. What has he thrown himself into? She galloped through plans in her mind. Matt was imitating a Seanchan nobleman. They must not know who he really was. Could she trade something to save him?
Approach, Fortuona said.
This man is not, Egwene began, but Fortuona spoke over her.
Not I, she said. Did you know that this woman was an escaped Damani? You knew her as a child, I believe.
You know who he is? Egwene asked.
Of course I do, Fortuona said.
He is named Notai, but once was called Matrim Kothon. Do not think he will serve you, Marath Damani, though you did grow up together. He is the Prince of the Ravens now, a position he earned by his marriage to me. He serves the Shanshan, the Crystal Throne, and the Empress.
May she live forever, Matt noted. Hello, Egwene. Glad to hear you escaped those Sharans. How's the White Tower? Still white, I guess.
Egwene looked from Matt to the Shanshan Empress, then back at him again. Finally, unable to do anything else, she burst out laughing.
You married Matrim Kothon?
The omens predicted it, Fortuona said.
You let yourself draw too close to a Taviran, Egwene said. And so the pattern bound you to him.
Foolish superstitions, Fortuona said.
Egwene glanced at Matt. Being Taviran never did get me much, Matt said sourly. I suppose I should be grateful the pattern didn't haul me by my boots over to Shale Ghul. Small blessing, that.
You didn't answer my question, Notai, Fortuona said. Did you know this woman was an escaped Damani? If so, why didn't you speak of it to me?
I didn't think too much about it, Matt said. She wasn't one for very long, Tuon.
We will speak of this on another occasion, Fortuona said softly. It will not be pleasant.
She turned back to Egwene.
To converse with a former Damani is not the same as speaking to one recently captured or one who has always been free. News of this event will spread. You have caused me inconvenience.
Egwene regarded the woman, baffled. Light. These people were completely insane. What was your purpose insisting upon this meeting? The Dragon Reborn says you will help our fight. Help us, then.
I needed to meet you, Fortuona said. You are my opposite. I have agreed to join this peace the dragon offered, but there are conditions.
Oh, Lightrand, Egwene thought. What did you promise them? She braced herself.
Along with agreeing to fight, Fortuona said, I will acknowledge the sovereign borders of nations as they are currently mapped. We will force the obedience of no Marath Damani, save those who violate our borders.
And those borders are? Egwene asked.
As currently outlined, as I
be more specific, Egwene said. Tell me with your own voice, woman. What borders?
Fortuona drew her lips to a line. Obviously, she was not accustomed to being interrupted.
We control Altara, Amadisia, Tarabon, and Almuth Plain.
Tremalking, Egwene said.
You'll release Tremalking and the other Seafolk Islands?
I did not list those, because they are not of your land but the sea. They are not your concern. Besides, they were not part of the agreement with the Dragon Reborn. He did not mention it.
He has a lot on his mind. Tremalking will be part of the agreement with me.
I wasn't aware we were making such an agreement, Fortuona said calmly. You require our assistance. We could leave in a moment. Should I order it? How would you fare against that army without our aid, which you so recently begged me to lend?
Begged? Egwene thought. Do you realize what happens if we lose the last battle? The Dark One breaks the wheel, slays the Great Serpent, and all things will end. That's if we're lucky. If we aren't lucky, the Dark One will remake the world according to his own twisted vision. All people will be bound to him in an eternity of suffering, subjugation, and torment.
I am aware of this, Fortuona said. You act as if this particular fight, here on this battlefield, is decisive.
If my army were to be destroyed, Egwene said, our entire effort would be jeopardized. Everything could indeed hinge on what happens here.
I disagree, Fortuona said. Your armies are not vital. They are populated by the children of Oathbreakers. You fight the Shadow, and for that I grant you honor. If you were to lose, I would return to Shanshan and raise up the full might of the ever-victorious army and bring it to bear against this horror. We would still win the last battle. It would be more difficult without you, and I would not waste useful lives or potential Damani, but I am confident we could stand against the Shadow on our own.
She met Egwene's eyes. So cold, Egwene thought. She's bluffing, she must be. Reports from Swan's eyes and ears said that the Shanshan homeland was in chaos. A succession crisis. Perhaps Fortuona really did believe that the Empire could stand against the Shadow on its own. If so, she was wrong.
You will fight alongside us, Egwene said. You made the treaty with Rand. Gave him your oath, I assume.
Trimalking is ours.
Oh? Egwene said. And you have set up a leader there? One of the sea folk? To acknowledge your rule?
Fortuona said nothing.
You have the allegiance of most of the other lands you've conquered, Egwene said. For better or worse, the Altarans and Amadisians follow you. The Tarabonners seem to as well. But the sea folk? I have no reports whatsoever of a single one of their kind supporting you or living peacefully beneath your thumb.
Borders, the borders you just mentioned, as they exist on maps, show Trimalking as sea folk land. It is not yours. If our treaty holds current borders as they are, you would need a ruler in Trimalking to acknowledge you.
It seemed a tenuous argument to Egwene. The Shanshan were conquerors. What did they care if they had any kind of legitimacy? However, Fortuona seemed to consider Egwene's words. She frowned in thought.
This is a good argument, Fortuona finally said. They have not accepted us. They are foolish to reject the peace we offer, but they have indeed done so. Very well. We will leave Trimalking, but I will add a condition to our agreement, as you have.
And your condition?
You will announce through your tower and through your lands, Fortuona said. Any Marath Damani who wish to come to Ebu Dar and be properly collared must be allowed to do so.
You think people would want to be collared?
She was insane. She had to be.
Of course they would want to, Fortuona said. In Shanshan, very occasionally, one who can channel is missed in our searches. When they discover what they are, they come to us and demand to be collared, as is appropriate. You will not force anyone to stay away from us. You will let them come.
I promise you, none will.
Then you should have no trouble making the proclamation, Fortuona said. We will send emissaries to educate your people on the benefits of Damani. Our teachers will come peacefully, for we will hold to the treaty. I believe you will be surprised. Some will see what is right.
Do what you wish, Egwene said, amused. Break no laws, and I suspect most will allow your emissaries. I cannot speak for every ruler.
What of the lands you control? Tarvalan, you will allow our emissaries?
If they break no laws, Egwene said, I won't silence them. I'd allow in white cloaks if they could say their piece without driving men to riot.
But light, woman,
You can't actually believe...
She trailed off,
watching for Chuona.
She did believe it. So far as Egwene could tell, she did.
At least she's sincere, Egwene thought. Insane.
Insane, but sincere.
And the Damani you now hold, Egwene said. You'll let them go if they wish to be released?
None who are properly trained would wish that.
This must be equal on both sides, Egwene said. What of a girl whom you discover to be able to channel? If she does not wish to be made Damani, will you let her leave your lands and join ours?
That would be like letting an enraged Grom free in a city square.
You said that people will see the truth, Egwene said. If your way of life is strong, your ideals true, then people will see them for what they are. If they don't, you shouldn't force them. Let any who wish to be free go free, and I'll let your people speak in Tarvalen.
Light! I'll give them room and free board, and I'll see the same done in every city.
Fortuona eyed Egwene.
Many of our Suldam have come to this war, anticipating the chance to capture new Damani from among those who serve the Shadow. These Sharans, perhaps. You would have us let them, or your sisters of the Shadow, free? To destroy? Murder?
To be tried and executed, under the light.
Why not let them be put to use? Why waste their lives?
What you do is an abomination, Egwene said, feeling exasperated. Not even the Black Aja deserves that.
Resources should not be discarded so idly.
Is that so? Egwene said. Do you realize that every one of your Suldam, your precious trainers, is herself a Marath Damani?
Fortuona spun on her. Do not spread such lies.
Oh? Shall we test it, Fortuona? You said you trained them yourself. You are a Suldam, I presume? Put the Adam on your neck.
I dare you.
If I am wrong, it will do nothing to you. If I am right, you will be subject to its power and will prove to be Marath Damani.
Fortuona's eyes widened in anger. She had ignored Egwene's barbs, calling her a criminal, but this accusation seemed to dig into her, so Egwene made certain to twist the knife a little deeper.
Yes, Egwene said. Let us do it, and test the real strength of your commitment. If you prove to be able to channel, will you do as you claim others should? Will you stroll up to the collar and snap it around your own neck, Fortuona? Will you obey your own laws?
I have obeyed them, Fortuona said coldly. You are very ignorant. Perhaps it is true that Suldam can learn to channel, but this is not the same thing as being a Marath Damani, any more than a man who can become a murderer is to be considered one.
We shall see, Egwene said, once more of your people realize the lies they've been told.
I will break you myself, Fortuona said softly. Someday your people will turn you over to me. You will forget yourself, and your arrogance will lead you to our borders. I will be waiting.
I plan to live centuries,
Egwene hissed.
I will watch your empire crumble, Fortuona. I will watch it with joy.
She raised a finger to tap the woman on the chest, but Fortuona moved with blurring speed, her hand grabbing Egwene's by the wrist. For one so small, she certainly was quick. Egwene embraced the source by reflex. Damani nearby gasped, and the light of the One Power sprang up around them. Matt pushed between Egwene and Fortuona and shoved them apart, holding one hand at each woman's chest. Egwene wove by instinct, intending to remove his hand with a thread of air. It fell apart, of course. blood and ashes, that's inconvenient. She had forgotten he was there.
Let's be civil, ladies, Matt said, eyeing one of them, then the other. Don't make me throw the pair of you over my knee.
Egwene glared at him, and Matt met her eyes. He was trying to deflect her anger to him instead of Fortuna. Egwene looked down at his hand, which was pressed against her chest uncomfortably close to her breasts. Fortuna was also looking at that hand. Matt lowered both hands, but took his sweet time at it, as if completely unconcerned.
The people of this world need you to, and they need you level-headed, you hear me? This is bigger than any of us. When you fight each other, the Dark One wins, and that is that. So stop behaving like children.
We will have many words about this tonight, not I, Fortuna said.
I love words, Matt said. There are some deliciously pretty words out there. Smile. That's always sounded like a pretty word to me, don't you think? Or perhaps the words, I promise not to kill Egwene right now for trying to touch me, the Empress, may I live forever, because we really bloody need her for the next couple of weeks or so.
He eyed Fortuna pointedly. You really married him? Egwene said to Fortuna. Honestly?
It was an unusual event, Fortuna replied.
She shook herself, then glared at Egwene.
He is mine, and I do not intend to release him.
You don't seem the type to release anything once you have your hands on it, Egwene said. Matrim does not interest me at the moment. Your army does. Will you fight, or won't you?
I will fight, Fortuna said. But my army is not subject to you. Have your general send us suggestions. We will consider them. But I can see you are going to have a difficult time defending the ford against the invader without a larger number of your Marath Damani. I will send you some of my Soldam and Damani to protect your army. That is all I will do for now.
She started walking back toward her people.
Come, not I.
I don't know how you fell into this, Egwene said under her breath to Matt. I don't want to know. I'll do what I can to help free you once we are done fighting.
That's kind of you, Egwene, Matt said. But I can handle this on my own.
He rushed off after Fortuna. That was what he always said. She'd find some way to help him. She shook her head, returning to where Gawain waited for her. Lyalwyn had declined to come, though Egwene would have expected her to enjoy seeing some of those from her homeland.
We'll need to keep them at arm's length, Gawain said softly.
Agreed, Egwene said.
You'll still fight alongside the Shan Chan, despite what they've done?
So long as they keep the Sharan channelers occupied, yes.
Egwene looked toward the horizon, toward Rand, and the powerful struggle he must be embroiled in.
Our options are limited, Gawain, and our allies dwindling. For now, whoever is willing to kill Trollocs is a friend. That is that.
The Andoran line buckled, and Trollocs ripped through, snarling beasts with stinking breath that clouded in the chill air. Elaine's halberdiers nearby scrambled as they fell over themselves to escape. The first few Trollocs ignored them, howling and leaping over them to make room for more to pour through the opening, like dark blood from a gash in the flesh. Elaine tried to gather what little strength she had left. She felt as if Sidar would slip from her at any moment, but the men fighting and dying wouldn't be any stronger than she at this point. They'd all been fighting for most of the day. Somehow, finding the strength to weave, she roasted the first few Trollocs with balls of fire, tripping up the flow through the wound in the human lines. Streaks of white, arrows from Birgitta's bow, followed. Trollocs gurgled, clawing at their necks where the arrows hit. Elaine sent strike after strike from horseback, tired hands clinging to the saddle as she blinked eyes that seemed leaden. Dead Trollocs toppled, forming like a scab over the hole, blocking the others from ripping through. Reserve troops stumbled up, seizing ground and pushing the Trollocs back. Elaine breathed out, wavering. Light! She felt as if she'd been forced to run around Camelin while pulling lead weights. She could barely sit upright, let alone hold the one power. Her vision dimmed, then darkened further. Sound faded in her ears, then darkness. Sound came back first. Distant yells, clangs, a very faint horn, the howls of the Trollocs, occasional thundering from the dragons. Those aren't firing as often, she thought. Aludra had moved to a rhythm in her firing. Bashir would pull back one section of troops and let them rest. The Trollocs would pour through and the dragons would bombard them for a short time. As the Trollocs tried to crawl up and destroy the dragons, cavalry would come in and smash them at the flanks. It killed a lot of Trollocs. That was their job. Kill Trollocs. Too slow, she thought. Too slow. Elaine found herself on the ground, Birgitta's worried face hovering above her. Oh, light, Elaine mumbled. Did I fall off? We caught you in time, Birgitta muttered. You slumped into our arms. Come on. We're pulling back. Birgitta raised an eyebrow at her, waiting for the argument. It was hard to make one, lying on her back mere paces from the front lines. Sidar had fled her, and she probably couldn't take hold of it again if her life depended on it. Yes, she said. I should check on Bashir. Very wise, Birgitta said, waving for the guard to help Elaine back onto her horse. She hesitated then. You did well here, Elaine. They know how you fought. It was good for them to see. They began a hurried trip through the back lines. Those were very shallow. Most soldiers were committed to the fight. They needed to win before that second Trolloc army arrived, and that meant throwing everything they had at this force. Still, Elaine was surprised at the depleted reserves, the small number that could be spared to rotate from the front and rest. How long had it been? The clouds had enveloped the open sky that often accompanied her. That seemed a bad sign. Curse those clouds, she muttered. What time of day is it? Maybe 2 hours from sunset, Birgitta said. Light! You should have made me return to camp hours ago, Birgitta. The woman glared at her, and Elaine vaguely remembered attempts to do just that. Well, no use arguing about it now. Elaine was recovering some of her strength and forced herself to sit straight-backed on her horse, as she was led to the small valley between hills near Kyrian, where Bashir gave battle orders. She rode right up to the command post, not trusting her legs to be able to support her walking, and remained in the saddle as she addressed Bashir. Is it working? He looked up at her.
I assume I can't count on you any longer on the front.
Too weak to channel for now, I'm sorry.
You lasted longer than you should have.
He made a notation on his maps.
Good thing. I half think you were the only thing that kept the eastern flank from collapsing. I'll need to send more support that direction.
Is it working?
Go have a look,
Bashir said, nodding toward the hillside. Elaine gritted her teeth, but nudged Moonshadow up to where she could find a vantage. She lifted her looking glass with fingers that shook far more than she would have liked. The Trolloc force had hit their bowed line of defenders. The natural result of this had been the infantry falling back, the bowl inverting as the Trollocs pushed forward. This had let the Shadow Spawn feel as if they were gaining the advantage, and had stopped them from realizing the truth. As they pressed forward, the infantry line had wrapped up and surrounded the Trolloc sides. She'd missed the most important moment, when Bashir had ordered the Aiel to attack. Their quick sweep around to hit the Trollocs from behind had worked as hoped. Elaine's forces had the Trollocs completely surrounded. An enormous circle of writhing Shadow Spawn fought with her encircling force, pressing them together to constrict their movements and their ability to fight.
It was working. Light. It was. The Aiel beat against the back flanks of the Trollocs, slaughtering them. The noose had been drawn. Which one of them was blowing those horns? Those were Trolloc horns. Elaine searched through the shadow spawn, but could not find the ones sounding the horns. She did spot some dead Murdral near the Aiel ranks. One of Aludra's dragons, attached to its cart and pulled by a pair of horses, was with the band's horsemen. They had been positioning the carts on different hilltops to fire down into the Trollocs.
"Elaine," Birgitta said.
"Oh, sorry," Elaine said, lowering the looking-glass and handing it to her warder.
"Have a look. It's going well."
"Elaine!"
With a start, she realized how worried the warder was. Elaine spun, following the woman's gaze south, far beyond the city's walls. Those horns sounding, they'd been so soft, Elaine hadn't realized they were coming from behind.
"Oh, no,"
Elaine said, hastily raising her looking-glass. There, like black filth on the horizon, approached the second Trolloc army.
"Didn't Bashir say they weren't supposed to be here until tomorrow?" Birgitta said. "At the earliest?"
"It doesn't matter," Elaine said.
"One way or another, they're here. We need to get ready to turn those dragons the other way. Send the order to Talmanis, and find Lord Tamalthor. I want the Two Rivers men armed and ready.
Light, the crossbow men too. We have to slow that second army any way possible."
"Bashir," she thought. "I have to tell Bashir."
She spun Moonshadow, moving so fast she became dizzy. She tried to embrace the source, but it wouldn't come. She was so tired she had trouble gripping the reins. Somehow she made it down the hill without falling off. Birgitta had left to convey her orders. Good woman. Elaine rode into camp to find an argument in progress.
"Won't listen to this," Bashir yelled. "I will not stand by and be insulted in my own camp, man."
The object of his scorn was none other than Tamalthor. The steady Two Rivers man glanced at Elaine and his eyes opened wider, as if he was surprised to see her there.
"Your Majesty," Tam said. "I was told you were still out on the battlefield."
He turned back to Bashir, who grew red-faced.
"I didn't want you going to her with—"
"Enough," Elaine said, riding Moonshadow between them. Why was Tam, of all people, arguing with Bashir?
"Bashir, the second Trolloc army is almost upon us."
"Yes," Bashir said, breathing deeply. "I just had word. Light, this is a disaster, Elaine. We need to pull out through gateways."
"We exhausted the kinswomen on our push up here, Bashir," Elaine said. "Most can barely channel enough now to warm a teacup, let alone make a gateway."
"Light, and I couldn't warm the tea." She forced her voice to remain firm. "That was part of the plan."
That's right," Bashir said.
He looked at the map.
"Let me think. The city. We'll retreat into the city."
"And give the Shadow Spawn time to rest, gather together and assault us?" Elaine asked. "That's what they're probably trying to force us to do."
"I don't see any other choice," Bashir said. "The city is our only hope." "The city?" Talmanis said, hurrying up, panting. "You can't be talking about pulling back into the city."
"Why not?" Elaine asked.
"Your Majesty, our infantry has just managed to surround a Trolloc army. They're going at it tooth and claw. We have no reserves left, and our cavalry is exhausted. We'd never manage to disengage from that contest without sustaining heavy losses, and then our survivors would be holed up in the city, trapped between two armies of the Shadow."
"Light," Elaine whispered. "It's like they planned it."
"I think they did," Tam said softly. "Not this again," Bashir bellowed.
He didn't seem like himself at all, though she knew that Saldaeans could have tempers. Bashir almost seemed like a different person. His wife had stepped up to his side, arms folded, and both confronted Tam.
"Have your say, Tam,"
Elaine said.
Bashir
began, but Elaine held up a hand.
He knew, Your Majesty, Tam said softly. It's the only thing that makes sense. He hasn't been using the Aiel to scout.
What? Elaine said. Of course he has. I read the scout reports.
The reports are faked, or at least tampered with, Tam said. I talked to Bale. He said that none of his Aiel had been sent on scouting duty the last few days of our march. He said he thought my men had been doing it, but they hadn't. I talked to Arganda, who thought White Cloaks had been doing it, but Galad said that it was the band. It wasn't us, Talmana said, frowning. None of my men have been used for scout details.
All eyes turned to Bashir. Who, Elaine asked, has been watching our rear, Bashir?
I...
He looked up, anger flaring again.
I have the reports somewhere. I showed them to you, and you approved them.
It's all too perfect, Elaine said. She felt a sudden chill, right at the middle point of her back. It spread down through her body, a wave of icy wind blowing through her veins. They'd been trapped, perfectly. Channelers run to exhaustion, soldiers committed to a close-fought battle, a second army left to approach in secret a day ahead of where falsified reports said they would be. Davram Bashir was a dark friend. Bashir is relieved of duty, she said.
But,
he sputtered. His wife put her hand on his arm, looking at Elaine with fire in her eyes. Bashir leveled a finger at Tam.
I did send the Two Rivers men. Tam Al-Thor must be the culprit. He's trying to distract you, Your Majesty.
Talmanes, Elaine said, feeling cold to the bone. Have five Red Arms put Lord Bashir and his wife under guard. Bashir let out a string of curses. Elaine was surprised at how calm she felt. Her emotions were deadened. She watched him be dragged away. There wasn't time for this. Gather our commanders, Elaine said to the others. Galad, Arganda, finish off that Trolloc army above the city. Spread the word to the men. Throw everything we have into this battle. If we can't crush the Trollocs in the next hour, we die here. Talmanis, those dragons can't be much use against the Trollocs now that they're surrounded. You risk hitting our men. Have Aludra move all of the dragon carts up on the tallest hill to pound the new enemy coming up from the south. Tell the Ogier to make a cordon around the hill the dragons are on. We can't have them damaged. Tam, put your Two Rivers bowmen on the surrounding hills, and have the Legion of the Dragon form up the front lines. Crossbowmen in the lead, heavy cavalry behind. Light willing, that will be enough to buy us time to finish off the surrounded Trollocs. It would be close. Light. If that second army surrounded her men. Elaine took a deep breath, then opened herself to Sayadar. The one power flooded into her, though she could hold only a trickle. She could act as if she weren't exhausted, but her body knew the truth. She would lead them anyway.